Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. No, that is not Leatherface that you hear outside of the A Pen and a Napkin studios. That is my neighbor getting his tree stump removed from his house, and hopefully this will be done pretty soon. But we are back in the coaching staff. On the other end, I have Freddy Krueger. No, wait, that is Mr. Tony DeVis, and he is sharpening his claws to dive into today's topic. Mr. Viss, how are you this fine October blustery afternoon?
I'm doing well. We're in the 60s after having been a couple days in the 50s, a little cold there. So doing well. Supposed to be in the 70s tomorrow.
Yeah.
Besides some tree trimming going on, how are things in your neck of the woods?
Well, we're doing okay. Softball team is at the state tournament. They just got a big win. They dropped their first one. They've won their last two. Now they're headed for another playback opportunity here. So to the team that they lost to in the first round, which is in our conference, which we had beaten two times earlier this year. So, you know, we're going to keep that going here. I literally think the guy next door is trying to chainsaw trees in China at this point. He is trying to get that far down. But nonetheless, we will persevere here on the coaching staff. Tony, episode number 105. I tell you what, I've got a literally killer's row of baseball players here with the uniform number 5. Listen to this, Tony. Albert Pujols, DiMaggio,
ooh,
Johnny Bench, Brooks Robinson, and George Brett all wore uniform number 5. But wow. I do have 4 basketball players, 3 men, 1 woman. 2 of them were teammates at one time while they were in college. What do you got for me, my man?
Anthony Edwards?
Nope. Is he number 5? I should have put him on the list.
I have no idea.
I think he's number 5.
He might be.
Yeah. I don't know.
Is he?
I don't know. Keep guessing.
Let me look it up. That's the guy running the chainsaw.
We got chainsaw guy outside. So, no, who else you got?
That was the only one. I didn't know there was that many number fives.
This guy, as a coach, took out Anthony Edwards in the playoffs last year.
Jason Kidd.
There's one. One is a female, has won multiple national championships recently.
Recently?
Yeah. This is the number. This is the number she wore. Yes, Anthony Edwards is number five. I should have put him on the list. My bad.
Yeah, you should have.
Yes.
Yeah, female national champ recently.
Coach.
Coach. Oh.
The uniform.
Don number. Staley?
Don Staley is correct. And two of these gentlemen were teammates in college. Many considered them fabulous. Some did not.
Jalen.
Jalen Rose.
Rose. Yeah, Jalen Rose. And then,
give you a hint. He wore 25 at Michigan.
Was that Jimmy King?
Nope.
Oh man, Juwan Howard.
Juwan Howard, there it is. That is it. So those are our uniform number fives here. Leatherface is taking a break next door here, so we're gonna keep rolling here. Last week, Tony and I, we got a lot of really nice. I got a couple of really nice responses on our pod from last week, Tony, about drills to start practice. So in my thought process, I thought it'd be great for us to. Let's put a bookend on it here. Let's talk about drills to end practice. And if you've got a strong end and if you've got a strong beginning and if you've got a strong end, then most likely your middle is going to be really, really good as well. So, Tony, I got about six or seven things listed here as I usually do. I guess I can get us started here. I think one of the things that we as coaches do a lot of is scrimmaging. And, you know, we did, when I was coaching, we did a lot of scrimmaging at the end of practice. But I think it's really important that, you know, obviously you have to have that element. You practice the things that are done the most in games. And transition in a high school game, you know, average high school game is about 60 possessions in 32 minutes. So you're transitioning on offense 60 times, you're transitioning on defense 60 times. And I really think that, you know, scrimmaging should be a big part of your practice. I really evolved in that regard, Tony. But I also believe that it's not just roll the balls out and let it rip. You've got to control, you know, I think it's important to have controlled scrimmages and not just let the guys or gals just go. We did stuff like stop, score, stop, or score, stop, score. We did, I'm just kind of looking it up right here, Tony. Of course, I can't find it. Where's my transition drills? You know, five on five, you know, what we called call the name transition to work on that. We had a drill that we called Nuggets drill. We did Coach Showalter's Laker drill. We had a drill we called 6-4 transition. A lot of different things that we would do in that regard. But I think scrimmaging is a great way towards the end of your practice, your last drill or two of practice. It's a great way to tie everything that you've worked on together for the majority of practice and in your practice in that way.
Yeah, and I like the part you were talking about, you know, the controlled environment, because I think one of the things that we need to work on are late game situations, because you're going to be in those a bunch. I mean, I'm using a football analogy here, and this is more of a basketball podcast, but let's go back to Oregon and Ohio State. Yep. Where Oregon intentionally put 12 men on the field,
yep.
Took a 5-yard penalty and knocked 4 seconds off the clock and really put Ohio State behind the eight. Now, I'm not trying to say, you know, that type of thing, but you can do stuff where, you know, you're down two with, you know, 3 seconds to go and you have to go the full length of the court or whatever the case may be. But working on those late game situations, I think, are so very, very important in terms of, you know, hey, we've only got four fouls here. You know, back when it was the 1-1, we've got a couple fouls to give. And now it's changed with obviously at the five, it's two shot, but you can practice those things and make them reset their offense, if you will, and work on some of those late game situations to put yourself in the best position to be successful. And I think that's something at the end of practice where maybe their attention spans are waning a little bit, that it can be something that you can do to kind of bring them back in. And so I think late game situations are a great thing to close practice with. And we do that pretty consistently once we get a little bit more into January, because there's so much stuff early on. We get a little bit more specific as we get towards January there to work on those items.
What else you got, buddy?
Another one that I think that's good to go through is as you get to the end, you want to work on some conditioning stuff. And I'm not a big put the basketballs away, hop on the inline and run guy. And so we would do stuff. We have one we call the man drill. And so you have a 5-on-5 drill. You cannot dribble it. You basically are allowed to pass it, and you're going to keep track of how many catches you have. Defense knows that you can't dribble it, so they're going to get up and play denial defense and really get after you. They're going to keep track of how many steals they get and different things. And at the end, you take the catches, you subtract the turnovers from it, and then you put another 2.5, 3 minutes, however long you want to do it, back up on the clock, and you reverse it. And now you have a team on offense for 2.5 minutes. Whoever wins watches the other team do some type of conditioning. And so those are things I think you can do with your conditioning towards the end of practice that can help get your team in better shape.
Yeah, if you're doing a bunch of, well, let's just get on the line and run lines or that type of thing, you're just wasting time. I mean, the game has evolved to the point where you should be doing your transition, or you should be doing your conditioning in transition situations, or you're practicing so hard that we don't need to condition. That's the attitude you need to bring to that. So I like that, Tony, and things like that. We had kind of something kind of similar to that. We called it 3-on-3 half of the court, where it was just a continuous drill of, the offense had to make five passes. The defense couldn't switch. And every time you got a touch on offense, you got to take one dribble, but you were limited to half of the court, so a quarter of the full court. And once you made five passes, okay, boom, you're in. Next group is in on defense. Or if the defense got a tip or whatever at any point, okay, offense, you're off. Defense, now you go to offense and you've earned the chance to get that. And we had a point system and all that other type of stuff. But that was a really, really good conditioning drill and concentration drill that you could do at the end of practice as well. So, one of the things that I did, and I kind of came up with this, during my sabbatical was, when we struggled at Scut, I really felt like, and it's nothing against the kids. My kids worked really, really hard, but we just didn't shoot the ball well enough to really win at a high level. We shot it well enough. We did enough things to win at a decent clip, but not at an extremely high level. And so one of the things that I was bound determined to do, and I know I've mentioned this before, is we were going to be better shooters. We were going to, I called them snipers. We needed to develop snipers. We needed to develop kids that if you leave them open, they're just going to drill shots. And one of the things that I wanted to do with that was to, is this guy like cutting down Sherwood Forest or what here? Can you hear it? Okay. Goodness gracious sakes alive. I apologize, folks. This is kind of the only time Tony and I could fit this in. So I hope you're enjoying the endorsement by what's a popular brand of chainsaws? I don't know, but this guy's letting it rip. So sorry, we were gonna shoot, we were gonna develop, we were gonna finish, we were gonna make layups, and so we really committed to shooting stations. The very last thing that we did at the end of practices that were not days before the game, we were gonna shoot, and we were gonna have these stations. We were gonna get up 20 minutes worth of shooting. We were gonna, and the way we usually set it up, Tony, we had one basket that had the Dr. Dish or the shooting gun or whatever you want to call it. And we had a coach that ran that, and here's what we're going to do. We had a finishing basket where we're just working on, coach had a pad and we're going into the pad and we're finishing it around the basket. And our third one was, you know, skill specific. Usually a lot of it was off the bounce, maybe a rebounder, passer, shooter type of a thing, whatever it may be. But we finished at the end of practice every day pretty consistently with 18 to 20 minutes of shooting. And not only did we need to do that, but also it was good for us, Tony. What I really noticed, and maybe I'm wrong, you know, you'd have to ask the kids, but you get your butt kicked in a scrimmage and how you feel when you're leaving the gym. The very last thing you did, oh man, we got beat 20-4 in the scrimmage today. You know, it was a way to where we, where the kids felt good leaving the gym. Hey, I made a bunch of shots at the end of the shooting drill today. It was something that they could control. And I really liked that. And we did a lot of that stuff, and it took commitment. There were times where, man, I wish, you know, we could have done another rebounding drill, but you know what? No, we have to commit to shooting. The rebounding will take care of itself, and or the ball handling we're just gonna have to give that up. And that was a conscientious choice by myself, that we're just, if we're gonna lose, it's not because we're missing open shots or we're missing open layups. We're gonna do everything we can to control that aspect of it, and that required getting a lot of shots up. Again, I've said this before. Our goal was 250 shots per player every single day in practice, and you just have to work it into your practice that if that's what we're going to commit to, that's what we're going to commit to. And so we wrapped up a lot of practices with that type of thing.
Yeah, I like that. We also would do stuff and still do stuff, you know, with a goal in mind. You know, full court, three-man weave shooting, got to get 100. And so if you're going to get three shots, two layups, one layup and two jumpers out of it, and you're just going to continue to go up and down the court with your three-man weave, two passes type of thing. And the thing that was good about it is you knocked down a three, instead of giving you one, we gave you two. And if all three guys made the shot, we would add another point in. And so we'd do stuff like that, and we'd usually put, you know, a certain amount of time, five and a half minutes, whatever it may be. And that was one we would end with. And they liked the fact that, hey, they, like you said, they would get it more times than not, and they would walk out of there feeling good about themselves. And the other thing that we would do, I think I mentioned this the other day, the six spot layup thing with 2 minutes on the clock, and you got to get 34, 36, whatever made layups. And for everyone they were under, we have what we call a touch, which is sprinting sideline to sideline. And so those were good things just to end with, that they could feel good about getting. And so I would agree that shooting is one of those things where you have a contest, you're trying to get a number in a certain amount of time. So there is that expectation and pressure, if you will. I think those are good ones to go with.
Mm-hmm. Folks, if you are looking for a good book, guess what? I have got something for you. Kings of Their Court, Three Teams, One City, and the Greatest Basketball Season in Nebraska High School History is available today on Amazon.com. It is the story of Tim Cannon at Millard North, Josh Ludke at Creighton Prep, and Doug Woodard at Bellevue West, and the three teams that they had during the 2021 season, the chaos that everybody was living through. The story literally picks up with the outbreak of COVID in March of 2020, and it carries through for the next 365 days. Everything that these players, these parents, these coaches that they went through, from COVID quarantines to George Floyd to the politics of the time to just trying to get the season in a somewhat normal fashion, with these three teams from this one city that were ranked in the top 25 in the country. Now think about that. That would be hard to do in a New York and a Los Angeles. We had that here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a terrific, terrific book. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the one that wrote it, but I think that if you're a basketball person, or if you like a good sports story, a very amateurish version of Friday Night Lights for basketball, this is the type of story that you're really, really going to enjoy. So go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in Kings of Their Court, and it's going to take you right there to it. It's $19.99 for the paperback, $9.99 for the Kindle version. Folks, check it out. I think it's a really, really great story, and I don't think you're going to regret picking up a copy of Kings of Their Court.
Another one that we would do, just kind of a little bit different variants at the end of practice, we usually have some type of free throw. Obviously, we both work Coach Finley's camp and know the Billy free throw drill. We would do that. We also had, I always wanted to be a game show host. We'd have Let's Make a Deal free throw shooting at the end. Because at the end of a game, if you're up, you're going to have to knock shots down. And so at the end of practice, if there's some conditioning behind it, it kind of simulates, if you will, that pressure, that stress to have to knock down your free throws. And so we would do things like that as well, because at the end of practice, hopefully they've practiced hard, they're tired, and you get a little bit more of that game-like situation. And so that's another thing with some type of free throw challenge to end practice with.
Yeah, I kind of had a twist on that, Tony. Whether it's free throws or some other things here, and I've heard other coaches doing this. I had somebody on recently, I can't remember who said that they did something like this, but what I would call a league of some sort, a consistent league. Hey, here's our free throw ladder, or here's here's our 3-on-3 league of the week, you know, and this is kind of maybe a situation like a lot of times here in Omaha, our Class A's play Fridays and Saturdays. And so they'll practice Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, play Friday and Saturday for their games that week. So, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that's a great thing to do to end your practices on. Okay, here's our 3-on-3 teams of the week. We're going to keep track of wins and losses. And, you know, you make a big deal out of it. 3-on-3, 4-on-4, free throws. You know, different types of shooting competitions. We, you know, rebounder, passer, shooter. Here's our rebounder, passer, shooter league. Today we're doing this and this and this, you know, and we're emphasizing that. I really think that's a good thing. We, one time when I was at Scutt, and we were getting ready to play my good friend Casey Hall at Duchenne, and, you know, Casey and Jim Boeheim, and their 2-3 zones, they get along very well. And, you know, Casey, I know you're laughing when you're listening to this right here. But we were playing them on Saturday. It was our only game that week. And so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, for 15 minutes every day, we had a 4-on-4-on-4 league, and we kept track of points for the entire week. And everybody was on the same team. We divided our top 12 or 16 kids pretty evenly. And we had these three teams, and we put it up on the wall on a poster. And I really think that without the kids knowing it, that really helped us to get ready to attack the zone that Saturday when we played Casey's team down at Duchenne. And so something like that might be something that you can do as a coach to get your team ready to go, or to change up the end of practice, kind of like what we did with the shooting thing. But it's something you keep track of, something that is competitive, but yet not over the top competitive. And maybe you give out awards, you know, 2 liter of soda for the winners that week, or, you know, simple things like that you could do to kind of like you're saying, Tony, that kind of the let's make a deal, let's give out a prize for the winner. So I don't know. What do you think about something like that?
I think it's good. You know, I've heard teams that do free throw ladder challenges, and they can kind of climb up the rungs and stuff like that. But it's a great way to know, you know, some of these leagues. This is a great way to know who your competitors are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have two more big things left, Tony. You want me to go?
I think I also have a couple.
Okay. Another great way to end things is just again, kind of in that line of shooting, but like a fun, consistent team game. That you can do. We did one. It was we called it 5-5-5-1. Really ingenious. You make 5 shots from about 15 feet on the baseline as a team. Then you make 5 shots from the free throw line, 5 shots from the top of the key, and then 1 half-court shot. And you know, you get to a point where if they're struggling with the half court shot that day, you're okay. All right, we've got, you know, you got 3 minutes. Somebody's got to make a shot in 3 minutes or whatever. And usually right when you say that, somebody drills it, you know, but, you know, different things like that, team games like that, basketball, bowling, or you could, you know, there's golf, there's baseball, different things that you can do in that fun sense of, you know, and maybe sometimes you get the coaches involved. Maybe you have a coach team every once in a while, to challenge your players in that, you know, 'cause I know, I always joked with my players about how good I could shoot it and different things. So, you know, it's a way to have fun. It's a good way to in practice. I think both of us are in agreement that you want to have your players walk out of the gym feeling pretty good about themselves on most days, that they're excited to come back for the next day. So a team game of that regard is something that I really, really enjoyed doing, Tony, is something that we did there.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that we find out is that the month of January seems like it never ends. And so sometimes the kids end up with a case of what I like to refer to as the January blues. And so there might come a point in time at some point in January that bleeds into February a little bit where you end practice with a game. That 5-5-1 that you were talking about, we would do what we call 30 and a half. 10 layups, 10 elbows, 10 threes, somebody's going to knock down a half quarter. Mm-hmm. We would play 21 as a team. So you would shoot from 15 feet. If you made the first one, you'd get two. Wherever you got the rebound out, you could take a dribble. Second shot was worth one. Fly down to the other end of the floor, shoot basically the same two shots in the same approximate positions on the other end before throwing the ball back to the next player in line. But all kinds of stuff. We would do, you know, obviously Snow Valley's cutthroat is a way that we would end practice as well. Yeah. You know, and that's one that's fun. And so we would do things like that. And I just think it helps, like you said, they want to come back in the gym the next day. And I think that's super, super important where you want to end on a good note. There's a smile on their face as they walk out of the gym. And I think that's an important thing to do.
Yep. What else you got, buddy?
You know, my last one that I would throw out here real quick that we would like to end with, and we don't do this a lot, but, you know, all you got to do is stand out in the hallway as a teacher a little bit, and you realize there's a lot of put-downs that happen. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in basketball, you know, as you kind of go through stuff, guys maybe particularly are pretty good at giving each other grief and things like that. But we would have what we would call a put-up circle at the end. So we'd circle around, and, you know, I would try to, you know, kind of show them what I would expect out of it in the beginning of the season. And then as the season progresses and you're doing this once every 2 weeks or whatever the case may be, then kind of pass on ownership to them where it's a put up where they've got to say something positive that they saw about another teammate or just about practice in general. Like, hey, I really thought we finished well around the hoop tonight. Or, hey, I thought Johnny did an outstanding job of hustling all the time in practice and knocked down some key threes and whatever the case may be. But I just think it's good for them to hear from each other every once in a while, those good things. And I think it means more coming from a peer, a teammate at times than what it does a coach.
Yeah. That peer-to-peer support and that type of thing, especially with teenagers. And, you know, girls tend to be better about it than guys about us, you know, kind of lifting each other up. I've really at times noticed that. Now, when it gets bad, you know just as well as I do, Tony, it can get really, really bad. It can get really, really bad, you know, and guys are just kind of, you know, we're goofy as well. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and a lot of 15, 16, 17 year old guys are, like I said, they're just goofy, you know, but it's good to have that. You know, a lot of guys don't want to admit that they really care about each other. It's hard for them to do at times. And so I like that concept of them having to verbalize it in that regard. I think that's a great idea, buddy.
I was going to say that was it for me.
Yep. I have something kind of along the same lines. You know, end your day a little bit early and do some sort of cultural exercise, like you talked about with your put-ups. You know, I think those are important things. We would have, you know, team discussions. Maybe we would put together posters, you know, what does a great teammate look like? Or, you know, maybe we would do that on the whiteboard in the locker room or you know, just different things of that ilk. You know, we really worked hard. And I think this is important for coaches. You know, I know my last few years here, we worked really hard in those 2 weeks that we really had by the time volleyball got over with. Those 2 weeks that we had to build our culture, to lay a lot of the bricks and the foundation for the season. But what happens a lot of the time is you put those bricks down and then you forget about them. And by early December, you're so worried about the next game, the next scout, the next opponent that, oh yeah, I forgot that, we're, you know, this was our team theme this year. And one of the things that I really conscientiously tried to do, sometimes better than others, but I think I did a good job with it, is to make sure that we were emphasizing those cultural exercises. I was constantly thinking about, okay, do we need to cut practice short 10 minutes today to put the basketballs down and do something together as a group? You know, that type of a thing. I think those are good ways to leave the gym to remind your players, this is what we're truly all about at Fort Calhoun or at Cedar Rapids, Kennedy, or wherever your program may be. So I think those type of things are just really, really important ways. At the end of a practice, we're going to leave here today. When you go home to the dinner table, that's probably the last thing you did is going to be the first thing that you probably talk to your parents about. So yeah, you know, Coach Plum, we went over this and this today, and we reread this part of the energy bus, or we had this discussion on this, or we, you know, we did a put up type of a thing. But those cultural exercises at the end of practice, I think, are really, really good things to do. We also did every day, this was an everyday thing. What'd you like from a teammate today? What did you see from somebody? And we would kind of go around, kind of a put-up type of thing that you were talking about, Tony. And then we would, you know, my assistant coaches would select a practice player of the day. And if you followed us on Twitter in that regard, you saw all of that stuff. And so having those little awards at the end of the day, spreading them around, special mentions for people, I think those are all such really, really good things to help your program grow. And, you know, especially when you get to January and people by this, you know, you've got kids that were expecting to play that aren't playing. Those are ways that you could keep the morale of your team up, even if the season is going well. After 6, 7, 8 weeks, when you get back from that holiday break, about January 10th, that's when those dog days kind of kick in. And I think those are great ways to break that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, like you said, it's just important. It's called the recency effect, where when they get home and they talk with parents, the thing that they're going to remember is that last thing that happened at practice and something to share with their family.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing. Is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska, and every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. Well, Tony, you know who is always, always, always willing to share any time that they can.
The Europeans.
They are absolutely ready to share. And Tony, I am ready to share with you this week's trivia question. Are you ready for this week's trivia question, my friend?
Let's do it.
All right. So, preseason college basketball rankings came out. Tony, I am jacked. I am excited. Now, I'm in a little bit different place. I don't have 20-some games to coach and 50 or 60 practices to prepare for, so I get a little more time to get to look at the TV and go, hey, who's playing tonight, and who can I watch here tonight, or who can I record tonight, all of that fun stuff. But this week, men's basketball preseason rankings, men's and women's basketball preseason rankings came out. Kansas is the number one team in the land. Preseason number one. It is the fifth time that Rock Chalk Jayhawk has been number one in the country in the preseason poll. Tony, what program has been preseason number one most often?
The Duke Blue Devils.
They come in second with 9 preseason number one appearances.
The North Carolina Tar Heels.
Yes, and it counts. Dean Smith on the sideline calling for the four corners. Phil Ford running out the clock. Just like Curly Neal, it's amazing. We need a shot clock.
Yes, Dean Smith.
What?
That was just all kind of off the cuff there, so
that was good.
Yeah, thank you very much. North Carolina 10 times, Duke 9 times, UCLA 8 times. They were preseason number one. So those were the top three of all time. So a lot of blue bloods in there, Tony. Thought you would have a good chance at it this week. Here, I will tell you this. After getting that question right that easily, I think you deserve a little.
Arby's, we have the meat.
I don't have an Arby's guy this week, Tony. There have been no new contracts signed in any. I looked up free agent. I guess you could say here today, a little close to home here, Doug McDermott signed with the Sacramento Kings. I didn't see any details as to what kind of contract he signed. I'm guessing it's probably a 1-year veterans minimum. But maybe that would be it. But I and if I missed anything, I apologize, but I did not see any signings. I don't know about you.
I'll look forward to Dougie Fresh's invite to get a beef and cheddar next week.
Well, in that case, I think it's time to say,
how about that?
And Tony, we have the opportunity to break some news. Literally, as I called up Tony this afternoon, it is Thursday afternoon, 4:48 p.m., and it has come across the wires that Virginia's Tony Bennett decided to, I'm guessing probably more resign than retire. But nonetheless, he has left his position. How about we say this? He has left his position as the head coach at the University of Virginia. Less than an hour old, Tony. We might be one of the first podcasts that's going to put it out there. Thoughts on this, buddy?
Surprising. Obviously, you know, he's a little older than I thought he was. He's 55. This was going to be his 16th season at Virginia. They have less than 3 weeks before they open up against Campbell. I believe November 6th is what it says here. And then they have not yet named an interim replacement. But it says here that looks like it'll probably be Ron Sanchez, who had been the head coach at Charlotte before he came back to Virginia ahead of last season. But also, Jason Williford would be another one on staff that might be in the running to be that interim head coach. But just surprised. I thought it looked like that Virginia was going to have a little bit better team this year than maybe what they've had. But I think he, like some of the others, Jay Wright, Nick Saban, are not big fans of the name, image, and likeness and the money and different things that is a part of college athletics currently.
You know, his dad did this at Wisconsin, just pushed himself to the point where he kind of couldn't do the job anymore. And I think he took Wisconsin, I think it was the year Michigan State won it, and they got beat by Michigan State in with the Flintstones and that group, Mateen Cleaves and them. I could be wrong, but he might have retired from Wisconsin right after they made that Final Four run. And then, of course, he ended up coming back and going to Washington State. You know, the Bennett family, Tony Bennett, both Tony Bennetts here, without a doubt, they served a higher purpose. Basketball, although important to them, has never been the most important thing. Definitely a faith-based man. You know, Tony Bennett, very much a spiritual man, big into the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And I think he might have just said, I need to do something else with my life as well. You know, I'm sure he's going to come out and talk about it at some point. But, you know, I can empathize. Tony, I had a year, and we had had it had been a tough couple of years, and I had a group of kids that were going to be seniors, and we got to like the last week of conditioning. So this is literally like the week before practice started, and I sat down with two of my assistant coaches that I really trusted, and I just told them, I said, I don't have it. And you know what, Tony, we've both done this job long enough. You know what it is, the it that you have to do the job. And I just had a hard time finding the energy necessary to really coach the way that I know that I needed to coach in order to lead the program the way that I needed to. And a lot of it had to deal with the stuff that had happened that had just kind of worn me down over the previous couple of seasons. Now after a couple of days, I kind of went home for the weekend and kind of, all right, let's get this figured out. And, you know, obviously kept going, you know, but I wonder if Tony Bennett also felt that as well, where he just maybe just said, I don't have it. I don't have it. I don't have the thing that I need to have in order to really do this job. And I could see Tony Bennett being the type of guy that would have too much respect for the game itself, where he says, I can't cheat the game. I can't do this like this. I would rather walk away than steal from the game. I'll be really interested to see what he says when he at some point speaks publicly about it.
Yeah, I think you're on to it. I think he has enough character and in principle in his life that he's not just going to collect a paycheck. He wants to do it right. And if he can't do it right and he's being worn down by, you know, all of the extras now besides the stuff on the court, I could see him saying it's time to go. And, you know, like you said, man of faith, very involved in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Maybe he'll take a leadership role in that, or maybe you'll see him on an NBA sideline as an assistant at some point. I don't know, but yeah. 55 years old. So, I mean, I'm assuming he's probably fairly well set financially. Yeah. Maybe he'll just kind of, you know, he gets to dictate what he does, and good for him, because a lot of times when you're a coach, there are other things that dictate what you do.
Yeah. Let's say this is it for Tony Bennett. What's the basketball obituary look like?
He's an all-time winningest coach in Virginia history. So I think, I mean, he's definitely not unlike the Mount Rushmore But he's in that next tier. I mean, he won a national championship at Virginia after the year before getting knocked out as a one seed by a 16, first time in college basketball history that had done that. And I give him a lot of credit. His defensive system is, you know, one of the best out there as far as the gap stuff. And yeah, I mean, he's really, really good. And so I would say in that next tier, not on the, Mount Rushmore of things, but in that next tier below.
Yeah, I think that maybe part of it, or, you know, one of the things he caught a lot of heat for, you know how it is, Tony, if you play slow and you win, you're disciplined. If you play slow and you lose, you're boring. Just like if you play fast, if you play fast and you win, you're exciting. If you play fast and you lose, you're undisciplined.
It's fun.
And I wonder if he had set the bar so high, and they've still been good, but they haven't been national championship competing for Final Fours. Good. The you know, since kind of basically the run to the championship they had here. I'm looking up their stuff from last year. What was their record? And it's not giving it to me. But they lost to North Carolina State in the ACC tournament. I don't know. It looks like they lost about 8-9 games. You know, I can't remember how they did in the tournament. They finished third in the ACC. So, you know, but I wonder how much of that may have played it. Because I don't care who you are, you still have ears. You still have ears. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they. I'm sorry. 2 years ago, they finished 25-7. Last year, they finished. Oh no, of course it's not giving it 23-10. You know, so I don't know. I mean, it will be interesting. I wonder if he just had to, like, his style did not maybe adapt to the positionless basketball and the more free-flowing basketball that we kind of see today, and maybe he felt that. I don't know. You know, again, I'll be very, very curious to see what he has to say. And maybe it's just a deal where he just says, look, again, higher purpose. I'm tired. I'm ready to move on, and let's go. You know, so let's talk a little WNBA finals here, Tony. Thoughts? It's 2-1. Sabrina Ionescu game. You know, I didn't get a chance to really see. I kept track of it. I was at a coach's clinic last night, so I didn't get a chance to watch it. Heck of a comeback by the Liberty, down big early, chipped away, and you know, regained home court advantage.
You know, I got home from conferences and flipped it on and caught the last little bit of it where Stewie was just going off and it got them, you know, into great position to win it. And then Sabrina, I know one of her heroes was Kobe and did her best Kobe impression with sticking a cold-blooded logo three to win it. Just incredible in terms of what she did. And I think she had felt slighted. The WNBA teams had come out and she was on second team. And I believe in the interview afterwards, she said, not bad for a second team all WNBA player.
Yeah, I did see that too. Yes, I did see that. Probably, I don't know, whose spot do you give her, you know?
That's a good question. I don't know if she felt like, I mean, I think her and Caitlin Clark have a good relationship.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like if she thought a rookie ahead of me, really? And I don't know if it would have been her.
I'm still Sabrina Ionescu. Thank you very much. Yeah. So it's kind of the way we thought it might shape up, Tony. 2-1, kind of a little bit, you know, how we got there might be a little bit different than what we thought. We both predicted Liberty in four, so it would have to be 2-1 for the Liberty to win in four. You know, the Lynx have been really solid. It's been an evenly played series. Even the game that the Liberty won, game two, that was the final score was a blowout. That was a close game until the last 3 minutes. And then they went on a big run at the end there. So, you know, are we still standing by our Liberty in four, or do we think it might go five?
I think it's going to go five. You know, because the Liberty are a proud franchise. They're a resilient franchise. They're a tough-minded. And so I think they're going to win the fourth one in Minnesota, and I think it's going to go back to New York. The only thing I worry, will New York dredge up the ghost of New York past, if you will, because I think this is their, I want to say it's their eighth appearance in the finals. Maybe it's six anyway.
Yeah.
And they have not won one. Mm-hmm. And so I obviously they're going to try to win it in four, but I have a feeling a sneaky suspicion this one's going five. I still like the Liberty in five games, winning the fifth one in a close barn burner on their home floor.
Yep. I think that's where I'm at as well. I think it will go back to New York, but I think New York will end up hoisting the trophy. A really tough, hard-fought game that they're going to probably end up kind of – I could see them winning it the same way they won game two would be my assessment. But that's why they play the games. So, mm-hmm. Tony, Austin Powers had bad teeth, baby. We've got some guys – with some bad knees here. Kawhi Leonard out for the beginning part of the season here, trying to get this inflammation in his knee taken care of. Embiid out for the rest of the preseason. Paul George hyperextends his knee. Lonzo Ball, kind of a great story here. Who knew when Lonzo Ball, and I forget his dad, I could see his dad's face. But
is it LeVar?
LeVar, yes. LeVar Ball. I never thought I would kind of feel sorry for Lonzo Ball, but I'm. It's kind of a feel-good story for Lonzo Ball. Played in his first game in over 2.5 years, over 1,000 days he went in between games, and scored 10 points in the Bulls game last night. How much are these bad knees going to affect the season here?
You know, it's kind of like what we've talked about with the Sixers. I don't think the Sixers are built for the regular season. They're building the Sixers for the playoffs. And I think they look at the big picture. We're back-to-backs for Paul George and Embiid, probably not on the table. But Kawhi, it's one of those things of what could have been. Because I felt like when Kawhi and they won the title in Toronto with him, and then he makes the move to the Clippers, you know, I at that time thought that maybe he had surpassed LeBron as mm-hmm. the best two-way player yep. in the game. And then he has had nothing but bad luck, bad knees, if you will, since then. And so you kind of feel for him as well. But, you know, I don't think the Clippers were going to do anything with Paul George going to Philly.
Yeah.
A lot of pressure on Kawhi. But if Kawhi can't perform and be out there consistently, the Clippers in that loaded Western Conference aren't going to get a sniff of the playoffs. And like you, I am rooting for Lonzo Ball. Hopefully he'll be able to bounce back. I thought the Bulls, you know, they had him, they had Zach LaVine, they had some nice pieces, had a good record, and then he gets hurt, and yeah. it's been mediocrity for them for a while now.
Yeah. I think that, we knew about the Embiid thing. I think the Paul George deal sounds like he's going to get out of this without major damage or anything like that, just a hyper extension. I don't want to say just a hyper extension because there's no such thing as just, you know, this or that. The Sixers aren't going to win the title in October or November. And they've got more depth than they had. We've talked about that. We'll get to our Pacific Division predictions here, but I think that is not going to make any difference in my predictions with what's going on with Kawhi's knee. Here's an interesting thing, though. If the Clippers don't make the playoffs, guess who owns their unprotected draft pick in next spring's draft?
It's a good question.
Oklahoma City.
Sam Preston strikes again.
Let's say they miss the playoffs, and it's an unprotected pick, and they win the lottery, they could get Cooper Flagg, or again, long ways till that plays out, but we'll see. So, real quick before we do get to the Pacific Division, Tony, college basketball preseason. Rankings come out here. The aforementioned Kansas Jayhawks, number one. any surprises that you saw? Let's start with the men's pool. Anything that you saw there that you're like, oh boy, I'm surprised they're that high, or maybe they're missing a little bit of the boat on them, or you know, where are you at?
You know, I think Kansas is the best team. There's no doubt in my mind on that one. But a team that I'm surprised a little bit in terms of things, you know, I think Duke is a loaded team, but it's a really, really young team.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe a little higher than 7. I was surprised that they were sitting at 7. I like Alabama at 2.
Yeah.
I think they've done really, really well with some transfers and guys coming back and so on and so forth. But I look at UConn and man, it goes, they're the champs. I still think Danny Hurley's on that sideline. But you know, they did lose some key pieces. And so 3 is probably about right.
Mm-hmm.
I think Houston might be a little high for my liking. You know, Jamal Shedd, I love Jamal Shedd, and yep. He's not there anymore. So yeah, I thought they were really a little good. High.
Yeah.
Iowa State, I think they might be a little higher for me too. I would say more 7, 8, 9 than where they are.
Yeah.
I watched North Carolina the other night against Memphis and was really impressed that they beat Memphis, who's brought in a lot of good transfers. But North Carolina, it's interesting. They're not as big as they have been.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting to see them play maybe a little bit different style of ball there. But they beat Memphis without RJ Davis, the preseason ACC player of the year.
Yeah.
And I think Auburn might be out there to surprise some people a little bit too. Yeah. So I see those, and I think Baylor's got a lot of talent.
Yeah.
But those are kind of my rambles as I look at it here initially. Yeah. How about you?
You know, just the Big 12 is loaded. You know, 5 of the top 10 are in there. And it's, again, Arizona, Big 12. That doesn't make a lot of sense. It still doesn't make a lot of sense. Well, that's another topic for another time. I think North Carolina might be a little bit too low. I'm gonna zig where you zag, Tony. I really like Iowa State. I think you could make a case for them being, you know, 2 or 3 if you really wanted to. Now I think Kansas is the best team. If it was best of 7, I think Kansas would be the favorite, but it's not. It won't be best of 7, obviously. I think Duke will have their growing pains. You know, again, maybe a little bit of a homer call. You know, I think Creighton might be more like 10-11 and not 15, but that's just me. You know, they got Kalkbrenner back. They've got a lot of good pieces back. Texas A&M, I think, and again, maybe just a little PTSD from watching them kick the snot out of Nebraska at the tournament last year, but they looked really, really good, and they were peaking at the end of the year last year, and they took Houston to overtime in the tournament. Rutgers with a couple of fabulous freshmen. They're in, you know, the 25 spot. How do they develop as the season goes along? Rutgers was not very good last year. They obviously needed a talent upgrade and got it. So, you know, those are some initial thoughts there. The women's poll, kind of, you have your usual suspects at the top. You South Carolina, at the top of the mountain here, UConn back at 2nd, USC at 3rd, Texas at 4, and I believe UCLA rounds out the top 5. Thoughts on the women's poll, Tony?
If you gave me a choice of South Carolina or the field, I think it would take South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have the potential to be a really, really, really good team. You know, I think they've been rated number 1 every year for the last handful of years, except for last year when they came in at 6. And so I think they're really good. I think UConn is a team that could give them some issues if UConn can stay healthy, which they have not done for the past several years, but they are very, very talented with Ozzie Fudd and Paige Beckers. Those might be the best backcourt in the country. And then as you keep rolling along, I really like USC a lot.
Yeah.
They've got the transferred in from Stanford.
Yeah.
Another one in from Oregon State to put around Juju Watkins, who, in my opinion, is probably the best women's player in the country right now.
Yeah.
And then UCLA is really good. Those ones. And then Texas, Vic Schaefer is in my opinion, is an underrated coach.
Yeah.
They will be really, really good. But that top five is tough. But I just think South Carolina is a little bit better than those other four.
Yeah. I think North Carolina has a chance. Olivia Miles is back from her return. That might be the best backcourt in the country, Olivia Miles and Hannah Hidalgo. Our Iowa State Cyclones, with a lot returning, Audie Crooks, Addie Brown, Emily Ryan as a great point guard, distributor, leader, a couple of, I know hard to imagine Coach Finley would bring in some shooting, but they got a couple of dead eye shooters that mm-hmm. came in as well. So there's a lot of parity out there. One through nine, one through 10 here. They've got a chance to make a Final Four. It is not beyond the realm of possibility. South Carolina is still going to be outstanding. But they did lose a lot. Cardozo, graduated. Ashlyn Watkins is in a bunch of legal trouble with first degree felony assault, different things like that. But this could be a real shakeup year. The women's game just continues to get better and better. The parity makes the tournament more exciting. I think it's going to be an outstanding season of not only men's college basketball, but women's college basketball as well. So.
Yeah, it seems like the product is better than what it has been the past few years.
Yep.
On both sides.
Yep. Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. All right, Tony, let's jump into our last NBA preview here. It is time for the Pacific Division. I think it's my turn to go first. I think so.
Okay.
I'll go first here. Last week we said, guys, what division did we have last week? But we were like, yeah, this is going to be a really
Southwest.
tight division. A lot of really, really good teams. This division is kind of the,
really average teams.
Yeah. Everybody's decent. Everybody's okay, but nobody's really great in this division. I had the Clippers in the cellar here, Tony. They just don't have enough talent. Harden is not the James Harden of 6-7 years ago. No Kawhi. At best, he'll probably be in and out of the lineup, it sounds like. This right knee inflammation that they just can't figure out how to manage and take care of. And if Kawhi is at the peak of his powers, if he's Kawhi Leonard of 2019, then the Clippers could probably, battle for the, this would be a great team in 2019, but it's 2024, 2025. And these two guys are not the players that they were at that time. And so for me, it was pretty easy to pick them fifth. Now, 1 through 4, a little bit more difficult for me, but I'll let you take the floor, Tony. Who'd you have in fifth?
The Clippers. And I think that was what was pretty easy.
Yeah.
Like you said, 1 through 4, you can make some arguments and they all have kind of their warts and their strengths, but I just think the Clippers will be at the bottom of the Pacific. And I think they'll be on the outside looking in when the playoffs are set in the Western Conference. They are in need of a reset.
And Cooper Flagg will be looking for a place to live at in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Wouldn't that be crazy? It'd be pretty cool, though.
It'd be nuts.
It'd be pretty cool, though. So, who'd you have in fourth, Tony? I think this is where it gets interesting.
I would agree. I think this is definitely where it gets interesting. I think you can make an argument for any of them to be in this spot. The one thing I would give you as I look at it, I take a look here at this and I go with the Golden State Warriors. I think are going to be in fourth. Losing Klay was a big loss. They are going to have to rely on some guys to step in that I don't know if they're going to be able to. Draymond, I would say you're starting to see the age a little bit as far as things go there. They're weak in the five. Kevon Looney, not what I think they hoped he was.
Yeah.
You go in and take a look at the guy they got from Indiana last year that played a decent amount at the five as well. I just don't think
he's Jackson Davis.
I just don't think he's the answer there either. And so I'm going to go Golden State. I know that we're 13 deep. Well, here's the thing. When you have 13 guys that you think can play, I don't know if you have 5 guys that can play. I know Steph Curry is still really good, but he is going to be in the teeth of every team's defense. I don't know if they have enough around him to take some of the heat off him. So I'm going to go Golden State in 4.
Andrew Wiggins needs to get back to form. And it sounds like he's been dealing with a lot of personal stuff. And by all means, that trumps basketball in every way, shape, or form. I would never try to say that. But, professionally, he needs to get back to the Andrew Wiggins that we saw, something close to what we saw when they won the title in 22, where he was the second best player on the team that won a championship in the playoffs. Kuminga is young and athletic, but he needs to take the next step. This is going to get really interesting, Tony, because I actually picked the Warriors for second in the division. Because of depth, because I think Steph has another 2 really good years in him. I like the Buddy Hield, Gary Payton II, Kyle Anderson. We just got bodies that are just going to win games in the regular season. Now in the playoffs, that's a completely different picture. I get that, but I had Golden State 2nd. I had the Los Angeles Lakers in 4th place.
Okay,
because
I can see that one too. The guys you're naming, I'm not trying to be whatever, but Buddy Hield, tell me where he's been good at.
Yeah, I get it.
And I can't get it. Kyle Anderson, those are not high level performers, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I just think that at some point, and maybe I'm just, betting on the guy that's been undefeated since the beginning of time, and that is Father Time. At some point, Father Time is going to catch up to LeBron and AD, and maybe those two guys were as healthy as they've ever been last year, and they were still the 8th seed. And what are the odds that LeBron will play both LeBron and AD will both play 70 some games again at a really, really high level? First year coach in JJ Redick, D'Angelo Russell is hot and cold. I think Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura, I'm pretty high on those guys, but, Cam Reddish, Max Christie, I think Dalton Connect is a good draft pick, but he's still a rookie. And I'm more than anything, I'm just betting on Father Time that, and I, you don't want to see it happen in the sense of, LeBron is, we'll never see anything like LeBron ever again, I don't think, Tony. But I don't know. Just can they, what if they only play 60 games this year apiece? I mean, that's, you know, they're depending on a 40-year-old guy in his 22nd year to play upwards of 70-plus games for them to just have a chance to get into the playoffs. That's hard to, in my mind, that's hard to, that's hard to do. That's a tough bet to make and to consistently win. Just my opinion. I don't know. Where are you at?
I've got the Lakers in third, okay, in the Pacific. There are players. I think Dalton Connect is going to be in the conversation for first team all rookie.
Oh, okay.
I think he'll be one of the top five.
Yeah.
I think he'll be one of the top five rookies in the league. I think Max Christie is a solid player. I really thought he was underutilized by the previous staff. So I think he's going to be able to do some things there as well. But I'm not saying they're going to set the world on fire. I could see them about in that 8 seed again, third place in the Pacific, 8 seed in the West. And I could also see them as a play-in team, mm-hmm, where they're having to win their way in to be able to play in the first round of the playoffs. But I do like them a little bit better, a little bit more, because I feel like Steph's on an island by himself. Mm-hmm. Like, it's Steph, and I can't tell you who the second leading scorer is going to be.
Yeah.
With LeBron, it's going to be Anthony Davis, or Anthony Davis. And the better situation for the Lakers would be if Anthony Davis was the leading scorer.
Yep.
And I just think there's a little bit more around. And I'm not saying J.J. Redick's going to win Coach of the Year, but I really think he is advanced offensively and is going to give the Lakers some different looks than what they had in their previous coaching staff. And I think he'll be an upgrade from what they had.
Yep.
But as a rookie coach, you know, he's got his work cut out for him.
Yep. So I had LA, the Clippers in the fifth, the Lakers in fourth. You had Golden State in fourth. You had the Lakers in third place.
Mm-hmm.
So I had Sacramento in third. That was my pick for third place. I really like the combination of De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis. Keegan Murray, I think DeMar DeRozan is going to be a really nice upgrade for them. They've got, you know, Malik Monk coming off the bench. And I think Mike Brown is a really, really good basketball coach. I think he's experienced. I think he's really found a place where he fits in well. I think Kevin Huerter will come back and hopefully play better than he did last year. So again, I could see Sacramento in fourth. I could see Sacramento winning the division. I put him at third, just because I thought Golden State, kind of more the, I'm betting on Steph Curry than I am more betting on, that good English there, betting on De'Aaron Fox, was kind of my thought process there. But talk to me, Tony, where'd you have Sacramento?
Put them in second.
Okay.
I put them in second in the Pacific. I like the players that you mentioned. And I go back, I just think DeMar DeRozan on that is going to be a big upgrade for them. You look at their bench, you know, you mentioned some of the pieces that are coming in off the bench for them. I like Kevin Huerter. You mentioned also Malik Monk. I think he is one of, if not the best sixth man in the league. I think Keegan Murray is going to take another step forward here as well. And I see Sacramento at a high octane offensive clip, ending up in second in the Pacific.
So then we both had Phoenix winning the division, by my math, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was your, I could tell you what I thought, but you tell me why did you pick them?
I went with them because last year they were all over the place on stuff. Like, mm-hmm, Bradley Beal didn't hardly play. They had, you know, some rest stuff and different things with Durant and Devin Booker. And I just feel like they're going to be on the court more together than what they were last year. I like Grayson Allen on that team as well as a bench player for them. I think Coach Bud is really, really good,
yeah,
in terms of his offensive stuff. And I think this is a big upgrade. And I like the previous coach as well.
Yeah, Frank Vogel.
The offense, yeah, Frank Vogel is just, the offense was not fitting the personnel. And I think Nurkic, with the way that Bud's going to play him, kind of the same way as he did with Splash Mountain there in Milwaukee, I think Nurkic is going to thrive under Bud. And I just think they have some nice pieces. And I see them the opposite of Murphy's Law. I think everything went wrong for them last year. And not that everything is going to go, you know, kumbaya and hunky-dory, but I think they're going to have a lot of things. And they've got some stuff to prove. I think Durant's got some stuff to prove. Devin Booker, after the Olympic experience, I think is ready to thrive there as well. I think Bradley Beal's got some stuff to prove. Bud, with getting a job again in the NBA, I think has some stuff to prove. And I see Phoenix winning the Pacific.
Yeah, I think Durant has one more great season in him. I think Booker was, I think he grew a lot. I mean, you know, we talked about everything that went wrong in Phoenix last year, and they still won 49 games. And they were not a play-in team. I think they were the sixth seed. Here's one of the problems, though. I'm looking on ESPN.com at their depth chart. Tyus Jones, day-to-day. Bradley Beal, day-to-day. Kevin Durant, day-to-day. Yusuf Nurkic, out. Grayson Allen, day-to-day. You know, five of their top six guys are either day-to-day or out. And I get it. It's October 17th. Just like we talked about, championships aren't won, but they are an older team. Bradley Beal has battled injuries. Kevin Durant has a lot of miles on him. But they are deeper. I think Tyus Jones as a point guard will help settle in a lot of things, kind of returns Devin Booker back to his true position of shooting guard. Nurkic and Mason Plumlee, two big centers that don't need to score a lot, will be good for them. And I think a big thing, like you said, Tony, I think Budenholzer is going to be a nice upgrade. I think Frank Vogel is a good coach. I think Budenholzer is a great coach. I think he caught way, way too much grief for what happened in Milwaukee. And I think Milwaukee obviously learned very on early last season that we might have, you know, made a bad choice in letting Coach Bud go. We might have overreacted just a little bit to that situation. So I agree with you there, Tony. I have Phoenix winning it as well, but I don't think any of these teams, at best, the best team in this division is the fourth best team in the conference, because I think Dallas is probably going to be better just because of Luka. I think Minnesota is going to be better. I think Oklahoma City is going to be better. And so I know a lot of these teams have championship or bust aspirations, and I don't think they're anywhere close to any of those top three or four teams. That's, again, just
I don't even know if any of them win a playoff series.
Yeah. Yep, I would agree with you. And I think Denver is probably better than any of these teams because of Jokic. I think they're better. So great, great episode this week, Tony. Episode 105. Anything to add on ending drills or drills to end practice to take us to the end of this here?
Yeah, I would just say this. It's kind of like the end of practice is kind of like how you end your sentence. Are you going to put a period at the end of it, or are you going to put an exclamation point at the end of it? And I think you want to put the exclamation point so that you walk out of there, hey, we had a great practice. And so don't just limp across the finish line, sprint through that thing, put some time and thought into it, and vary what you do.
Yep. I love that. That's a great example. That's good stuff out of the social studies department at Cedar Rapids, Kennedy there, Mr. Viss. You know, are we going
to
end it?
Trying to represent.
There you go. End it with a period or end it with an exclamation point. And I think that's a great way to explain it to your players. So episode number 105, drills to end practice. Want to thank our sponsor, Ruiz Auto. They've got a big trunk or treat thing going on up at 90th, just south of 90th and 4th. Go check it out. I'm going to check it out Saturday. I've got a proctor the ACT Saturday morning. I'm going to go check that out on my way home and check in on Juan Carlos and Esmeralda, see how they're doing. So should be really, really good. I can't thank them enough for all that they've done for the pod. Tony, great podcast this week. Try to stay warm as fall comes to get in here, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, buddy.
Sounds good. Make sure Leatherface is out of your neighborhood before you unlock your doors.
If I look out my window and I see him in a hockey mask, I'm moving right now. That's it. I'm done. I'm out. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.